so anyway, they asked me this morning, they said, did you need to sit down? I said, yeah, I actually did need to sit down, but I didn't. But they said I could sit down tonight. So if I sit down tonight, you'll understand. So that's the way it goes. Do I? Yeah, I went home this afternoon and I slept for 2 hours. Y'all ever do that? I don't typically ever do that. You know, 30 minutes. Yeah, I'm still something. Yeah. And I told y'all this morning, as long as you're back past the third row, you're probably okay. Yeah. You know. Yeah. I'll just have to do this. Yeah, I'll just have to walk a little forward a little bit here and make sure everybody gets exposed. Yeah, everybody gets exposed. Herd immunity, isn't that how it's called? Yeah, after we all catch it, herd immunity. All right, we're going to be talking about Daniel, and this is the last lesson that I'm going to give you dealing with a prelude to Daniel, okay? And one of the things that we're really going to be looking at is Babylon tonight. Babylon, and we'll see this here in just a few minutes, but Babylon was considered one of the seven ancient, wonders of the world. Yeah. It was a beautiful, beautiful city. And another thing that we're going to look at too tonight is the fact that when we're talking about Babylon, this is the place where the Tower of Babel was. Of Babel. The Tower of Babel. Okay? This is the place. And so, this was an area where they built. And they built gorgeous things. And there's a place where there was a hanging garden, what they called the hanging garden there, which was one of the most beautiful places in the world at the time. And so this city was indeed one of the wonders of the world at that time. Now, I saw a deal today, believe it or not, between my nap and coming back over here. I saw a deal today that they were actually talking about Babylon. And they were talking about the Tower of Babel. And they were running all these tests based upon the bricks that they were making and whatnot that they made back at that time. And they said, okay, how tall could that tower have been? And the answer to that is this. They said it was probably the height of the Statue of Liberty. That's probably what it was. And it wasn't just a singular tower. It was what I call a stair-step pyramid as it went up. And that was one of the things that allowed it to be built taller was by using this stair-step pyramid. And they were asking about the bricks and all this stuff, and archaeology is interesting to me because they find all this stuff and they take it out and they say, okay, you know, how did they do this? How did they do that? And to me, it's really interesting. But one of the things was they said, where'd all the bricks go? And the truth of the matter was that a city that was just a few miles away from there came down and harvested the bricks and took it to their city. So it's the same bricks. They got it from the same area. And, of course, they can see exactly that. But they came and they took them and they transplanted them into their city and used those bricks for that city. And that's why you don't have a lot of the ruins like they would have normally had. But they still do have the foundations. And so, to me, that's very interesting. One of the reasons why it's so interesting to me is because The more we learn, the more we discover, the more it proves that the Bible is correct.
Steve?
It by far it increases my faith. Yes, sir.
How tall did you say ever say in feet how tall that they could build it?
It was about as tall as the Statue of Liberty, is what they said.
And that's I don't remember exactly. Like the lot reaching the heavens.
It was short. It was pretty short.
So God. I always thought, you know, that they must be getting way up there. That's why God confused their speech to where that they couldn't
That's
build
right.
it no longer.
That's right. But, well, it was because of their arrogance.
Yeah, they wasn't even getting close to getting there. They were just, it was what was in their heart to try
That's
to
right.
get there.
That's exactly right.
Wait.
It's 305 feet. That's what we're looking at. 305 feet is the Statue of Liberty. It's a football field. Do what? The base of it is very wide because, again, it was kind of pyramid-shaped. It was what I call the stair-step pyramid. That's not what it's called. But that type of pyramid that we see over in the Americas is typically the type that they used at that point, which gave it more structural soundness so it could grow bigger. Yes, sir?
I was going to say, if I remember correctly, though, God had told the people to replenish the earth.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't. They were gathering together. They were...
Right.
And when he dispersed with different languages, it caused them to disperse and go into the world.
Correct. God's plan is greater than our plan could ever be. Go ahead, Don.
So you say the ruins have been located?
The ruins are definitely located. We know exactly where they are. Yes, sir. We know exactly where they are. We know exactly where the foundations are. All those things we know exactly because they have been located. Go ahead, Bob.
Steve, on the way to worship tonight, we got two phone calls, and I'd like for the church to know about them.
I'm sorry.
Susan Mitt Johnson's daughter called us and said that Mitt couldn't stand pain and they'd give her a pain pill and she couldn't. It made her real sick and she's lost some of her knowing her mind and she wanted people to know about that and pray for her.
Okay.
And also for all the railroaders. Ray Lumen lives in front of me, and Pam called Ann, and he's had a heart attack, they think, and he's in Baptist Hospital.
Okay. What's his name, Ray?
Lumen.
Who did? Joe did? Paul?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, any other questions? I've got a lot to cover tonight. And we'll pretty well get through it because it's just information more than anything. And then next week, what I'm planning on next week is that we actually start with the verses next week. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1 is where we will begin next week. So that's where we will be. All right, any questions or comments before we get involved? Now, what I'm looking at here is the general setting of what was going on at the time that the book of Daniel was written. And as I've told you before, my point of view is that it is incredibly important for us to know the background of everything that is written in order to totally and completely understand the book in which we are covering. Got one over here. PJ's running.
Go faster.
Yeah.
Steve, do you know or have any idea or guesstimate the distance from Jerusalem to Babylon?
No, I do not. Babylon itself is on the Tigris River, which is in Iraq. And I don't know exactly. Kathy's looking it up. Yeah.
I'm smarter than average,
man. Yeah. I don't know exactly the miles that we're talking about, but of course, Daniel came from Jerusalem. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego comes from Jerusalem. They're friends. They what? Yes. Yes.
It says 83 kilometers or 58 minutes. Takes 58 minutes. So I'm not sure. I don't
58
know
minutes at 30 miles an hour or 130 miles
kilometers.
An hour? Okay, I'll throw a little algebra in there. Do what? Yes? 55 miles. Okay. 55 miles. All right, so let's look at the place. The general setting that you're going to see is indeed Babylon. Okay? It is indeed Babylon. It is in the same area, and I'm going to mention this, it is in the same area where Abraham came from. The city of Ur. Yes. It is in the same area. And having said that, realize this as well, that this was a very idolatrous group of people. Abraham's father was an idolater. And they worshipped who?
Sun god Sin.
The moon god.
Moon god.
Moon god Sin.
That's close.
You were close. The moon god Sin was who they worshipped. And so when we studied Abraham in our Tuesday night classes, remember that one of the things I told you about was Abraham had a knowledge of God, but his knowledge was very, very small. He grew up worshiping idols. He grew up in a family that worshiped the moon god, Sin. Okay? That's where he was from. Now, this ancient city was located approximately 55 miles south of modern Baghdad. 55 miles south of what modern Baghdad is. It's in Mesopotamia, between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. That's where it is located. According to Genesis 10:10, Babylon, or Babel, was a part of Nimrod's kingdom. It was also the site of the tower reaching to the heavens in Genesis 11, 1 through 9. This is the Tower of Babel. This is the location. Now, again, the main reason why God went after these people and caused this, and the dispersion is very interesting as well. But the main reason is just because of their arrogance. They thought they could build a tower up to God. Can't do that. But that's what they said. Okay? Here's the map. Take a look at this map. This is a really good map. You see Jerusalem down there on the bottom left, actually middle left. You see Jerusalem. And you also see Babylon. And it's right there on the Euphrates River. Did I say Tigris a minute ago? There's the Euphrates River. Okay, it's Euphrates River. But it's right there where Abraham came from is not far from that area. Very idolatrous. Yes, sir. Yes, actually. Because remember, there are four rivers that are listed in the Garden of Eden. Two of those rivers, we don't know where they are or where they were. But two of those rivers are the Tigris and the Euphrates. Yeah. Yeah. So it would have been in that region. It would have definitely been in that region. Now, that region is extremely, even to this day, that region is extremely fertile. Extremely fertile. Those rivers do have a tendency to flood. That area there becomes very fertile ground. If Iran, is it Iran? Iraq, excuse me. If Iraq would spend all the money that they've got on military and put it into their agriculture, they would be one of the leading agricultural countries of the world, without a doubt. And again, today, it is still that way. It is still that way today. Yes, ma'am. That's okay. Arabia Minor is where Turkey is today. And that's, the Asia Minor is where the seven churches are that we studied in Revelation. Okay. This is an image of what the city would have been. The city was extremely well protected, had extremely high walls, and so it would have been something that would have been very formidable if somebody would have tried to overthrow them. Here is a painter's image of that city. And if you notice, they've also got the image of the Tower of Babel there as well. It was extremely large, and extremely high. Here is an image, a painter's image, or a painter's thought of what the Hanging Gardens would have been like. So again, this is an area in which was gorgeous. Anybody who walked into that town or that city would have immediately been taken in by all the ornate details, all the plants, everything that they did with that city. That's why it was called one of the seven ancient wonders of the world. Here are some ruins of it. So, Don, you were asking, do we know where those are? Yep, sure do. Here are some of the ruins. All right. According to the ancient Greek historian Herodias, Babylon was the wealthiest city in Persia, in the Persian Empire. The wealthiest city. So that's important for us to know, because one of the problems that a lot of these cities that become extremely wealthy, and we studied a little bit of that in Revelation, when they get to the point that they think that they got everything they need and they don't need God, they have a tendency to push God aside. And that's why I've warned us here about the United States. You know, we are definitely the wealthiest nation in the world. Yes, it will fall from within, as most of these places do. But we get to the point that we think we've got everything we need, and therefore, that's the end of it. If you read the book of Isaiah, King Ahaz was exactly that same way. He thought, that he had everything he needed. He told Isaiah, he said, I don't need God. We've got all these treaties. We've got all these things sitting here. We're going to be able to fight off these Assyrians, and we're not going to have any problems with this. And then Isaiah said, look, says this is not going to work because these people that you've made all these treaties with, they're not going to stand with you. and you're going to be overrun. And Isaiah's response to him was, if you'll just ask for any miracle, God will show you a miracle to prove to you he is with you. And then Ahaz, his response is, I don't need a miracle. I don't need a miracle. We got this under control. Well, we know what happened. We know what happened. He did need a miracle. He did need something. And I think I've told y'all before this, but one of the things is, you know, I probably wouldn't have needed the miracle, but I would like to have seen one. And so I said, well, show me this. And so God would have showed it. And here we go. But realize that we can get just as arrogant as they. And if we get as arrogant as they, to the point of we don't think we need God, we think we've got everything we need, that's usually when God comes in and shows us that, yeah, you do need me. That's usually when that happens. Okay? Eventually, the city was conquered by the Greeks under Alexander the Great in 331 B.C. Herodias states that the entire city encompassed an area of almost 200 square miles. Almost 200 square miles. What is the largest square miles city in the United States? Oklahoma City. Believe it or not, Houston's number two. Oklahoma City's number one. If you ever drive down to Houston, you think you don't ever get out of Houston. Oh my gosh, I can't get out of Houston fast enough. Yeah. Yeah, they'll push you right on out. That is exactly right. 200 square miles. 200 square miles is how large the city was. It was completely surrounded by a wall which reached a height of 350 feet. Not quite. 305, yeah. Yeah. The height of the walls were 350 feet. Of course, they go down too. So you got the level ground, and then they dug down, and so they built them down off the cliff. So 350 feet. Babylon was renowned for its temples, shrines, and monuments to their gods. And notice what it says, gods with an S. Because they had many. They had many. The step tower, or ziggurat, that's what it's called, was the greatest of these structures. The famous hanging gardens were considered one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, and there were terraces with trees and other vegetation built on a vaulted artificial hillside. This is what we know about the city. Questions or comments about the place? The idea, a lot of that comes from the Greeks. And the Greeks believed that there was a God over everything. I mean, there was a God over the stars, there was a God over the moon, there was a God over the clouds, there was a God over the rain, the fire, the rivers, that there was a God over everything. And, of course, if we know the story of the Greeks in the book of Acts when Paul goes into Athens. Remember, he goes through the streets and he sees all these temples because every one of these gods had to have a temple built. And then there was one temple that said to the unknown God. Well, they were afraid that they might offend one or leave one out. So they built one that was to the unknown God. And then Paul uses that to tell them, he says, let me teach you about this unknown God. Let me teach you about this unknown God. Do what? Yeah, sure. Now, one of the things that I found interesting in my lifetime is dealing with Hindu people. Because dealing with Hindu people, yes. Because Hindus believe in multiple gods. And at last count, there were 1,200 gods that they worshiped. And it was real interesting to me when I would go and I was in Guyana and I was speaking to these Hindu people. They were real quick on saying, yep, we'll take him. We'll take Jesus. He can be one of our gods. And then we say, no. He can't be one of your God. He is the God. You know, it is God the Father, Jesus the Son. It is not multiple gods. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, they were real quick on accepting Jesus as another one of their gods, but not the God. And so they would just cut you right off. They'd slash you right off at the knees and you're done. You're done. They're not gonna discuss it anymore. And their statement was to me always, me born Hindu, me die Hindu, was what they used to say.
So do they not believe that he is the Messiah or there is a Messiah?
No.
They don't believe there's one at all.
No, they just believe there's, you know, in the caste system that the Hindus believe in and whatnot, you know, they believe too if you're a good person here on this earth and you come back, they believe in reincarnation, that you come back as a rich person. The better you are, the richer you come back. Okay? That's basically how it goes. And if you're not a very good person, you come back as a dung beetle. And then the only way not to be a dung beetle anymore is to be the best dung beetle you could be. Yeah. So I guess that's the way you do it, you know. But literally, that's the way they believed. And in their system, there's different levels of heaven. You can raise up to a different level. You can go different ways, and it's a very long, drawn out type thought process. Go ahead.
Do they believe all the gods are equal in power and ability? Or,
no.
Or do they believe there's some greater gods and lesser gods?
Yes. And, of course, that comes from the Greek philosophy. Of course, Zeus was the number one. Zeus was number one. And, you got Thor, you know, the god of thunder. Yeah. Yeah, that's Norse gods, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know all that. I had to study that stuff at one time, and I filed that back in 13. So, what'd you say, Kevin? Oh, yeah, I guarantee you. I guarantee you. Somebody had something over here. John, do you have something?
You know, being good people.
Yeah.
That word general. And they're reaching for what they call the bomb. To reach that point in time where they don't have it.
Yeah.
And it has its roots back in Moses.
Yeah. Sure does. Sure does. You have to earn your way. You have to earn your way. All right? Although there is some debate about when exactly the book of Daniel was written. Notice this. It was during the reign of I'm going to mess up these names. 175 to 164 B.C. I just skip them. The most likely completion date was around 535 B.C. Yes. Most all of Daniel was written by Daniel.
By who?
Daniel. However, in the studies that we'll look at as we go through there, there comes a point where Daniel, the book of Daniel, goes from the first person to the third person. And so they suggest that there was at least one other writer other than Daniel. But most all of the book of Daniel was written by Daniel. Jesus himself brings that up about the writings of Daniel. Ancient historians, Jewish historians, also say that Daniel was probably the writer. But it would not surprise us at all if there weren't some others, due to the fact that you go from the singular person, first person witness, to third person witness. And so when that switches, they think that there was probably another writer involved. The first part of this book was written in Aramaic. Now this is interesting about Daniel, because Daniel is extremely intelligent and extremely well educated. Okay? This is important as we go through there. The first part is written in Aramaic, which is the international language of the Assyrian, Babylonian, and Persian empires. It's not written in Hebrew, which we would think it would be written in Hebrew. It's not. The first part isn't. Language experts determined that the Aramaic of Daniel is comparable to that of Ezra and the other Egypt, and which all date from around 5th century B.C. Okay? So, bottom line is that Daniel was well-educated.
What is Elephantine or whatever that is?
It's one of the people. It's one of those countries that I can't pronounce. Okay? The presence of the book of Daniel in the Hebrew canon is evidence for the 535 BC date. Okay? So it is written in both Hebrew and in Aramaic. It depends a lot on who Daniel is writing to at the point. That's why it's written in different languages. Josephus, y'all know Josephus, he maintained that the canon was closed by the end of the reign of Artaxerxes. I said it pretty good. That's 464 to 424 B.C. If Josephus is correct, then Daniel was included in the Jewish writings before the end of the Persian Empire. Copies of Daniel were among the Dead Sea Scrolls. Y'all know what the Dead Sea Scrolls are. That's the Alexandrian text. That is the oldest text that we have, or oldest manuscripts that we have currently. The Dead Sea Scrolls, the Alexandrian text. Okay? This suggests that the book was written much earlier and accepted as scripture much earlier than these dates. Okay, now we get into the author, as was asked just a minute ago. Much of the book of Daniel is written in first person, which means Daniel witnessed it, he wrote about it. Several times, Daniel referred to himself as the witness of the events he describes. And here's a lot of verses that go along with that. Daniel claims to be present in the royal court in Babylon from 605 to 536 B.C. And next week, when we start with chapter 1, verse 1, you're going to see that. That's how it starts out. It starts off by telling us that he was there. The prophet Ezekiel recognized Daniel with Noah and Job as men of righteousness. Now, Daniel, being incredibly intelligent, incredibly well-schooled, he was probably, and I'll get to this here in just a minute, but he was probably of the royal court in Jerusalem. That's where he came from. Therefore, he would have had access to a very strong education. And he was one who was held up very high for his righteousness. In other words, his desire to do the will of God. Daniel is one of those people that I wish that I could be like. Because he was definitely a man after God's own heart. Ezekiel mentioned Daniel as being noted for wisdom and revealer of secrets. Okay? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Okay? Other Jewish and Christian works testify to Daniel's authority. Oh, excuse me, authorship. I'm sorry. Josephus spoke of a historically significant man by the name of Daniel, who lived during the historic era corresponding with the events mentioned in the book of Daniel. So again, that goes right along with it. Jesus himself quoted from the book and attributed the words to Daniel the prophet. Jesus speaks about that. And if y'all were here for the transition from Revelation to Daniel, you saw that because we covered Matthew 24. Now, Nebuchadnezzar carried many of the nobility and young people into Babylon captivity in 605 B.C. so they might serve him in his court. Now, one of the things about Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar was king for 41 years. We know that. And during that time frame, Nebuchadnezzar was not stupid. Nebuchadnezzar was not stupid. The stupidest people in the world that I've ever dealt with are those who think they know it all and they don't need any help. Those people are not smart. They're just not. But Nebuchadnezzar realized that if he surrounded himself with these very intelligent young men, primarily, who would work with him and teach him and guide him and help him in his own court, then he himself then would prosper. He realized that. And I've worked with some people that were on both sides of that fence. I worked with some people that when they had questions about education, they came to me and ask me the questions about education. And I'm also smart enough to know that if there's a medical question that's out there, I'm not gonna have you ask me about it. We're gonna go to Tim or somebody and get some medical information. So you gotta realize that there are people that know things that you don't know. And when you don't know it, you go to those that do know it. And those, to me, are the most intelligent people. And I think Nebuchadnezzar was one of those people. He was sharp. Why did he bring in these people? Why did he bring in Daniel? Why did he bring in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Why does he bring in these young men that are highly intelligent, that have been trained, that are coming out of the king's court in Jerusalem? Why does he bring in these very well-educated people? He knows that their education will help him along the way. Sure, it makes him a lot smarter. And what you have is, you have that happen with Nebuchadnezzar. Because even though Nebuchadnezzar does some really stupid things, when he's called out on it, Nebuchadnezzar does have a tendency to repent of that and to turn away from it. Okay? Daniel was in that group of people. He was probably about 15 years old at the time that he was taken in 605 B.C. Now, he was taken from Jerusalem. Yes, sir. Just very short period of time. Because up to that point, Nebuchadnezzar was not king. But Nebuchadnezzar was in charge of the siege that took Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar becomes king shortly before 605 B.C. Basically, yeah, he was there a long time. Yeah. And matter of fact, I think we'll see this in just a minute, but one of the things is that the question is that Daniel probably lived in Babylon his rest of his entire life and has actually died there in Babylon. Daniel may have been a member of the royal family in Jerusalem, and there are lots of indications that basically say that. And again, we'll see that next week when we come together. Josephus contended that Daniel and his three friends were from the royal family of Zedekiah. That's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel was a person of deep, abiding faith. Like I said, I wish that I could have that much faith. That would be something I would strive for. As a young person, he would not defile himself. That's chapter 1, verse 8. When he was old, he persisted in serving God despite threats against his life. We'll see that in chapter 6 when we get to chapter 6. God blessed Daniel because of why? His great faith. And elevated him to a high official under Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and Darius. Having been instructed in literature and language of the Chaldeans, Daniel was well educated. Again, we'll see that first thing next week. Daniel used both Hebrew and Aramaic in his writings, which would have told you that he was very educated in order to be able to do that. I can't do that. I can't write two different languages. I can't hardly even write English. Wait a minute. I'll take that back. I can write two different languages. I can write English and Arkansan. There you go. Yeah.
Got cursive and printing, and that's two languages these days.
Yeah, it is. I guarantee you. I'm pretty amazed that young people can't write cursive. And I'm just going, what are you talking about? You know, we spent a whole year learning how to write cursive. Yeah, I think they're trying. I don't know. In his historical reference, he wrote in Hebrew, and in his dialogue, he writes in Aramaic. Again, his writings, whether they be in Hebrew or Aramaic, depend greatly on who he's writing to at that time. Okay? Daniel was contemporary with Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Jeremiah prophesied in Jerusalem before the Babylonian exile and as the exile began, 627 to 582 B.C. Ezekiel prophesied in Babylonian among the exiles in 593 to 571 B.C. Daniel prophesied in the capital city of Babylon in 605 to 536 B.C. Right. Very well known. Extremely well known. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Got one over here, Joni? I didn't see your hand over there, Joni. There you go.
What was the spoken language? Let there be words. What was the written, the spoken language?
At that time, in Babylon, it was Assyrian, okay? But in Jerusalem, it was Hebrew. So we're talking different languages. And it depended a lot on who it was that was taking them over at the time. Now remember, I told y'all this when we were talking about Revelation, that the one common language that they all had was Greek. Y'all remember that. And they all had that because they had to speak Greek and they had to write Greek in order to go into contract and business. That was what the Romans required. So basically it was whoever was in charge at the time, whoever had overcome them at the time, was how that was. And again, when you have Assyrian writing versus Hebrew writing, again, it depends on who he's writing to. Daniel had a great reputation for wisdom. Wisdom. Where does all wisdom come from? God. All wisdom comes from God. He had a great reputation for that. Ezekiel uses Daniel's wisdom as a standard in the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel also included references to Daniel's righteousness, placing him alongside Noah and Job. Little is known about Daniel's personal life. You're not going to find much at all dealing with Daniel's personal life in the Scripture. No, and I'll show you why here in just a minute. We do not know the names of his parents. We do not know if he was ever married. And we do not know if he ever had children. Now, Josephus indicates in his writings that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, all of them were taken into Babylon and they were made eunuchs. So they would not have had children. They could not have had children. No, go ahead. Okay. Yeah. There's a reason for that. He did not want, Nebuchadnezzar did not want them to populate Babylon. And so he did that for that purpose. Now, Josephus, again, of course, he's a historical writer. He's not a biblical writer. But Josephus says that basically all of them were indeed made eunuchs to where they could not reproduce. Go ahead. Very common in that day. You know, if you're going to have a, especially if you're going to have a person that is there in the castle or in the palace, you don't want that person being able to have children. You know, you want them for yourself and only yourself. So, yeah, been very, very much a common thing of that time. The ones that they had in their that Nebuchadnezzar used for their wisdom and their guidance and things, I think they did. And based upon what Josephus says, it kind of sounds like they did. Yes, sir. Right. That's exactly correct. That's exactly correct. So there's reason behind it. And it's a safety reason. It's something that, you know, you don't want that to take place. You don't want them to come and populate like what happened in Egypt. That's for sure. You don't want them to come and overpopulate the city of Egypt or the country of Egypt as they did back at that time. Josephus described Daniel as an architect, saying that he built a tower at Ecbatania in Media. Reportedly, the king of Media, Persia, and Parthenia were buried in this tower. And a Jew was also assigned to be the caretaker of that tower. It is thought that Daniel died in Babylon. So the indication is that he probably spent the rest of his life in Babylon. It's thought that he died in Babylon. However, some believe he returned to Judea, then Persia, where he died in the city of Susa, one of the capital cities of the Persian Empire. So they don't really know. Really quickly, purpose and theme of this book, God's chosen people had been uprooted from the promised land and transported to the Babylonian captivity. Babylonian captivity was promised by Moses in Deuteronomy, also predicted by the prophets in Isaiah and Jeremiah. God's wrath was provoked by Manasseh in 2 Kings and Jehoiakim in Jeremiah 36. The people spent 70 years in exile. 70 years in exile. Since the temple had been destroyed and the people carried away, God had been completely discredited among other nations. Notice that little part in blue that I've got up there. Once the city was destroyed under Babylonian destruction, the Ark of the Covenant is never spoken of again. We do not know where it is. We do not know what happened to it. As I told you, I probably think, this is my own personal thought, but I think that it was melted down and the gold was used and taken, and I think it was destroyed. When they came in and destroyed the temple, they destroyed the ark. That's my personal thought. That and, of course, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, based upon the Raiders. Okay. Outward appearance shows the gods of Babylonians were more powerful than the God of the Jews, which is the Lord God. Outward appearance shows that. It seemed that God was powerless to deliver his people. The truth is that God was using these foreign people to punish his own people for their sins. The purpose of this book is twofold. First, it is written to convince faithful Jews that God had not forgotten them and that he would restore them to Jerusalem. Second, it would show the pagan nations that God truly is the sovereign God. Daniel 2:21 is the theme for this book. If it is he who charges the times and the periods, he removes kings and appoints kings, he gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the people of understanding. There you go. The thought that dominates Daniel's writing is that God rules in the affairs of men. This theme is either stated directly or demonstrated in every chapter of this book. The truth was important to Daniel's readers, who were supposed to be the people of God, but who suffered at the hands of those who defied God. The theme is a message of comfort for the persecuted, as was the theme of Revelation. It sure does, doesn't it? Regardless of our suffering, of how we view the present misfortune, God is in control. This truth would be a great source of faith during that time of tribulation, the time of tribulation that took place in Revelation, and any time of tribulation that we have today. It is the message from Jesus to the churches in the book of Revelation, and also the message to the people of Daniel's time. Questions, comments? Yes, sir. Yes.